January 1st, 2018 was a landmark day for marijuana legalization in California. For many, the moment was another stumbling misstep toward even more compromised societal norms. For others, including my guest, it was a hard-fought moment, emblematic of a culture coming to its senses and embracing a kind of inevitable tide. Either way, it was a decisive moment, charged with the energy that comes from societal, economic, and interpersonal difference. It was a moment I decided this podcast needed to enter into. My guest, Matt Shotwell, has been in the weed business for over a decade. He was featured on Discovery Channel's reality show Weed Country. He's a son to his parents, a brother to his siblings. He's an adoptive parent to a piranha named Brittany. He's a person of faith, and he's a longtime friend of mine. So I'm inviting you into a conversation about a real-life cultural shift. I'm inviting you into a conversation with someone whose world you may not be at all familiar with or comfortable. I'm also inviting you into a conversation between friends. As I've said in the lead up to other episodes of this podcast, I will issue a fair warning to listeners for whom traditionally foul language is a problem. You'll find a bit of it during this conversation. But I'll also add to that warning an equally fair challenge, that if I'm sincerely interested in someone else's story, I don't get to decide how they tell it. Check it out.
So because we didn't do a whole lot of video,
yeah.
Give for folks who are like where are we right now? We're in Vallejo.
Yes, we're in Vallejo.
You're from Vallejo.
You're from
Virginia.
I'm from Virginia. I'm from Fairfax, Virginia, and I lived there for the first 23 years of my life, and then I moved out here to finish up my college education at Cal Maritime Academy here in Vallejo to be a merchant marine officer.
And it's while you were out here that at the Maritime Academy that your entrance into the weed industry started.
Yes.
How so?
So,
because it's not everyone who goes from like being a merchant marine. It's not like there's not like weed use within the merchant marine corps.
Right.
But not everyone goes from like being a merchant marine to being like the weed guy in the area.
That's a big departure, and it really kind of threw everybody in my circles for a loop. And they're like, "What the heck are you doing?
Yeah.
What are you doing?" And I was like, "Well, so what happened was, I mean, in college, you know, we all, you know, everyone's just sample weed, try weed, whatever. You're not supposed to, and all that. And but when I graduated the academy and I got a job with the Department of Defense, Military Sealift Command, which is the Merchant Marines, and they're under the Department of the Navy, and you can be a civilian mariner on those ships, and a ship's officer or enlisted per se, or unlicensed it would be in the Merchant Marines, and there's also active duty Navy people on these ships as well. You know, sometimes, you know, SEALs, and sometimes just regular Navy people doing what they do, and we're transporting stuff for the Navy to places for the war. So that's the function of the Merchant Marines. And when I was out as a Merchant Marine, it was during that time that my little sister Melody got Hodgkin's disease lymphoma. And then not much longer after that, and you know, in about a year's time, my dad also got cancer, kidney cancer. So they asked me to, like, they were exploring the cannabis options, the weed options. You know, us being from Virginia, we really didn't know shit about it. People on the East Coast just smoke weed to get high, and it's not as progressive and understood as well as it was in California because of Proposition 215.
And they were coming to the medicinal marijuana as an option because they had to have complications with other medications.
Well, they were like, "What's up with the weed thing?" Like, I think most people are like, "I hear weed cures cancer, right?" And so, like, we all have heard this, but we don't know how the fuck does that happen. Like, how do you get to that point? And it's not by smoking it. But, you know, we're all like, you know, so I'm out here, I'm the guy out in California. My friends all smoke weed. A lot of my friends grew weed. One of my good friends named Matt taught me how about the weed growing process. And, you know, him and his friend Alex moved to California, wanted to go to college, wanted to grow weed. And I became friends with this guy named Matt, who was my classmate, shipmate, and teammate at the Maritime Academy on the rugby team. And, you know, he put himself through college growing weed. I got student loans and he grew weed. Him and his roommate grew weed, and he paid all of his college tuition to the Maritime Academy. So he taught me how to grow. So I learned about it in college by watching my friends do it, so I learned processes, but I'm obviously not growing weed in my dorm room or anything, but they grew off-site in other places, and I was kind of fascinated with it from that perspective. And then my,
and this is the, what year is this?
This is when I was like, they were growing other play. I was in the dorm rooms of the Maritime Academy, and this is in 2004, 2005, and 2006.
Oh wow!
And so I'm watching these California kids or people just growing weed in California as the Virginia kid, and we're all in college together at the academy, and you know, and living on ship or whatnot, and some of my friends grew weed. And I knew friends of friends of friends, and I'm starting to see grow rooms and stuff like that. But then I went on to be a merchant marine officer, and that was it. You know what I mean? We grew a couple plants on the hillside and stuff.
In your mind at the time, was it still like it was a thing that happened in the shadows? It was still kind of a general no-no.
Definitely.
Or like for you, or was it like, because this is part of the conversation here. It's like there's the cultural, like, this is not okay. Hey, I know this is not okay, but I'm okay with it personally, kind of a thing. Or, you know, I'm still holding to previous notions, or still holding to tradition, and I have an interest. Or are you looking for a doorway in already?
Not looking for a doorway in. When I was in college here in California at the Maritime Academy, you're not allowed to be smoking weed. Definitely not growing weed. None of that shit.
Right.
I mean, but I came to meet some people in school that were doing it. Just, you know. And it was very clandestine because of your association with the military and the merchant marines, and you're getting drug tested and all that. And so most of us did not smoke weed or do drugs. We did occasionally, you know, but you like you don't want to lose your license and not get your license and whatnot. So you're on the straight and narrow. You're supposed to be when you're in these schools. But it was more fascinating with me. And then you know, I tried grew a couple plants one place somewhere out and just to like do it and try it and stuff. But it didn't. But I had my goals, and my target was being on a merchant marine officer and on ocean going cargo ships. That's what I went to school for. That's what I did. And the weed was just like, that was the career path. That was, and the weed thing was just like a fun California new guy thing. Like, hey, you guys can grow weed. You go get your cannabis card, and everybody can grow your little six plants. I'm like, I'm legally allowed to do it. You got to do it on the low because you can't let, you know, your alma mater find out, and you can't let the Department of Defense find out, and the Coast Guard find out, and all the regulatory agencies around being a merchant marine officer can't. So yeah, you're doing it secret, right? And so I, that's pretty much how it was. Yeah. It was just like a hobby for fun. And then I'm out here, and I would go visit cannabis clubs and stuff when I'm not out on ship and stuff like that. And so I was in the industry and just growing on the side occasionally when I was not out at sea. I'd have a contract, I'd go out to sea, do my contract, come back, do a grow, learn about it some more, tinker, get a ship job, go back out to sea, go to China, Japan, Korea, come back, you know, partner with a friend on a little grow. And so it just kind of built from there. And then tried to make them both happen, and then just finally decided, you know, I'm just going to commit. And
was there a turning point for you? I mean, because there's like the origin of things with regards to like your family cancer. Here's a road forward with regards to cancer and treatment. Was there a similar turning point where you went from like, this is what I want to do career wise like here, this is vocation now, this is like.
Well, it started out as me sending some stuff because my little sister was taking a shoebox full of meds. She had like a little Steve Madden shoebox with all these different pills in it. And this one did this, and this one fixed that, and helped with this. But they all had some weird side effect, you know. And, you know, generally, and then the chemo with the port and stuff like that. And we were all kind of like every, and this is back in like 2004, 5, 6, in that era. And we're from Virginia, and like I'm new to this cannabis cures cancer even idea, and I'm not going to even say that cannabis cured her cancer because it didn't. She did chemotherapy, but what she used it for was to improve her like quality of life and feeling good and appetite and eating and like I can eat some dope pills and fix that, but those would make her sick and stuff. So she was like, you know, kind of seeking like everybody is when you're sick and dying, like, does this weed shit help? I mean, we all smoked weed growing up as teenagers anyway, but there's no medical marijuana in Virginia. It's like, you're smoking weed to get high, and that's what it's for, and that's what it's about. So this is a whole new, like, I hear out here, and that's what it's for. It's like, well, let's do that. So, you know, kind of learning. It was like a both and thing, kind of like recreational and medical, and then like, oh, this is serious now. Let's really take this thing seriously. And then I'm like, can I make a business out of this? And I'm like, yeah, I can make a business out of this. And I have a business background from working in my family's small business, which they still run, just furniture, antique, restoration.
Because that's part of your, I mean, that's part of your makeup is, like, you're entrepreneurial by nature. You're inventive, you're industrious.
Yeah. That's from my family, small family business. You know, all my brothers and sisters, we've all worked there. All my aunts and uncles all work there. still running 44 years later today. Just my dad, my mom, my
businesses that your family built.
Yeah, small family business. Mom, dad, little brother. That's it. It's three people and an uncle. So four people right now. Yeah, all Shotwells.
Continual resistance, one way, shape, or form. It's like that's legal, that's social. Can you talk about like the ways in which this is a career path? This is a vocation for you personally. You continue to meet resistance, and what that's like, and how do you work through that?
Resistance. That's a good way to describe it. Yeah. Some people say chaos, but there's that's a nicer
because
resistance
it's not
is
like
nice,
right because it's like it's like they're like you're up against. You're up against whether they're social norms or like legal restrictions.
I see what you mean.
And public perception.
Yeah. So yeah, there's resistances all there. Definitely going from working for the government and serving my country on ocean going ships for a war that I was like, what the fuck is this war about? Really? Right. And then my family, and then the cancer thing, and then I just felt like those were kind of like. I'm like, oh, I'm going to get into this, but I can't have my feet in both pools at the same time. So I had to finally decide. And one of the deciding factors was the expiration of my merchant mariner's license from the United States Coast Guard. It's for ocean going cargo ships, any ocean, any vessel, unlimited tonnage, Queen Mary cruise ships, aircraft carriers, unlimited tonnage, biggest license in the world you can have. And I took a 4-year degree to get this thing in millions of classes.
Yeah.
And so when that expiration date happened, that was kind of the defining moment when I was like, am I going to go down to the Oakland Coast Guard office and walk in that federal building and sit down and take a test and then go take a piss test and then abandon what I've been building? Because I stopped going out to sea at a certain point in like 2008 and 2009, but my license was still good. But I would work on the ships in the port as the night mate because the ship would come in from China, come in from other ports with American mariners, American merchant seamen on them, and they need another fellow officer with the same qualifications to go out to sea to be the OIC on the ship officer in charge that night while they go to Walmart, go see their family, go to the restaurant, get off the ship for a little bit. So I would be the night mate. And I was doing that while growing weed, learning the business. So I'm growing weed and like transitioning and then sending it to my family and they're making their weed butter and making their edibles and stuff like that. And I'm going to Berkeley Patients Group and going to Harborside and buying stuff. And I'm like, I cannot live this duality, but my life's had a lot of dualities. I've lived a lot of different things at the same time, and then my life changes dramatically, and I'm like, I'm at this pivotal point here. My license is about to expire. I'm going to go down here, and I was just like, I just let it expire.
So and that was you the sort of where you had an opportunity. Then. So there was
I could have renewed it again. I had a year's time of grace time after that, and another year went by. I could have gone back down and been like, I want to sit and you have to retake certain navigation tests, deck safety tests, terrestrial navigation, celestial navigation, deck safety, ship safety, deck general stability. Like there's tests to like, can you drive this ship and not kill humans with a $1 million of the jet, of cargo on board and jet fuel and stuff. So I was like, because I was out at sea, I felt like I was meant for more. I accomplished it. I was driving the ships out in the middle of the ocean. There, it was great solitude. But as a young person just wanting to just take on so much, I was like, I feel like I'm being held back. Now that I'm 37, I'm like tired. I'm like, where's that ship? Can I just go back out to sea and have no problems and leave me the fuck alone?
Yes, running your own business and all of you.
I look back and I'm like, I wish I kept the license so I could just dip. And be like,
part of what I hear you say about that moment was, and it's not like this has ceased to be the case, but there is this sort of, because there's a secretive element to what you to the pot world, to weed world. Like you were living in this place where like here this is what's allowable for a person, here's what's not allowable, and so much of what happens with regards to the weed industry happens still in these kind of clandestine spaces.
Yeah.
And you were given the opportunity by by nature of this timing, the expiration of your license, to make a choice and say I'd rather not as much as I can live this duality. I'd rather just say, hey, I mean, it's the way you said it in an interview, like advertising on the front page of the newspaper. My name's Matt. I'm selling weed.
Yeah.
Period.
That's what I'm doing. Selling weed for cash. That's what I do.
I'm selling it for cash. This is what I do. There came a point for you in which...
Like, it's like I was coming out.
It was... Well, in a sense, it was. It was sort of like this duality. Like, you wanted to be done with the duality. You wanted to be done with...
I had to come out
like,
of the cannabis closet.
Here's the thing. I need to not pretend like I'm not doing... This is the thing. There, which... And this is part of why I'm using the word vocation, because like... It's one thing to have like a hobby. It's another thing, but like this is what I do. It's part of my life, which becomes like an identity thing.
Yeah, it was a lot of identity. Like, and it started as the merch. I'm the Merchant Marine guy, and I'm selling weed. And then people at my alma mater, my classmates, and my parents, and a lot of people were like, "Huh? Like,
yeah.
Like we thought you were keeping this shit a secret. And now you're like putting it on Facebook and like opening a business in the ghetto of Vallejo, like during the height of like our depression here in like 2009-10, like after the crisis of housing stuff. And like this place was a ghost town of crime and fuckery. And I'm opening a weed store with like no permit. And I'm wearing a bulletproof vest and my own gun on my hip inside my shop. And people thought I lost my mind. And I guess I had to kind of be kind of crazy, but I was like, there's so much opportunity here. I just have to lean forward, believe in myself, and I can do this. And I had spent so many months out at sea just like staring at the ocean, like dreaming up the plans of like, is this really what I'm going to do for the rest of my life? Just be an old salty ass sailor being on ship in the middle of the ocean when presidents are being elected and birthdays are happening, humans are dying, wars are going on, and I'm just in this well-paid $14,000 a month jail taking cargo from China to the United States to Alaska to Europe all over the world. While cool and stuff, I was like, cool, I've done this, I've got the t-shirt, like, what is next? Like, there's so much more going on, so I wanted to get into stand-up comedy. I was a dream of mine to do, so I did that, and I went into comedy college in San Francisco and did all the classes and went and did some open mics and did my thing and checked it off the box, and I was like, I'm going to grow my weed, I'm going to do this business, and I'm going to supply it, and I'm going to do that, and I just was like, you know...
Finally, but the thing you found meaning in, the thing you felt like it seems your journey is in terms of doing something that has more purpose, more direction, and connection... is in the weed industry. Are you finding that now, like on the other side, like you're not at sea staring at the ocean.
Yeah.
You're running a substantial business. You have multiple employees, clientele, you have multiple RVs. Like things are happening. Like this is your life now.
Yeah, I've got stuff happening and stuff.
Is it connecting the way you want it to? Like, does the dream live up?
Yes. Yeah. You know, it's, I look at it and I just, well, it's funny. I don't think I'll ever be satisfied, to be honest. And I've been told that, and I'm still kind of figuring out why, like when is enough. And my dad asked me that one time and he was like, how much would be enough for you, Matt? I'm like, I don't know. When I first got into the weed business, I was just wide eyed and very optimistic. Like, I have the first dispensary in downtown Vallejo, and it's 400 square feet, $400 a month. And it was just me with my gun and that I bought when I was a merchant marine officer. And just like totally optimistic. And people were like, what in the fuck are you doing? I was like, I don't know. I'm just running a tiny little weed store. Just let me do my thing. And I never thought it would be where I am today. That's for sure. I didn't think I'd make a television show about it and have driving a gold bus around with it. So I never visualized those things. Had I just been maybe just made better choices, maybe just been less aggressive or less impulsive, but I'm also trying to figure out my wiring and trying to do, and looking into like deprogramming some things that I was taught, and maybe some psychotherapy that could maybe help with that. And you know, my LTG that I'm in has really been instrumental in like deprogramming some of the shit that I learned in Virginia and my old man, and just the baggage we carry from places we've been.
For folks that don't know what you mean by an LTG, you're in an LTG. What's that mean?
Like a life transformation group. It's a men's group. It's kind of my homies. We share life and just stories and just seeing like, you know, what is, you know, if Jesus was like the benchmark, you know, and, you know, I always used to say that I was a fan of Jesus, you know what I mean? And, but always, you know, overall trying to follow Jesus, but so many people are fans of Jesus because it's just fucking hard. And with the programming that I come from, before military schools and background and a lot of ego attached to things and my programming and my wiring and just my shit, you know, submitting and following somebody else's ethos and somebody else's manuscript, which is clearly better than some shit that I came up with. You know, how I'm going to run my life. I'm steering my ship, per se, and doing what I want to do. You know, and I'm just that wired, that kind of person. Is a conflict, but you know, I was raised a Christian person and brought up in an Episcopal church in Fairfax, Virginia.
And so you, as a regular practice in your life, you get together with these this group of men,
every Wednesday,
and sort of white balance your life.
Exactly. What's God saying? What's God doing? Trying to listen to that more than all the chaos that goes on in my head and mind and all the world, universe shit going on around me. That I, in my personal opinion, you know, and some people think, maybe not know this about me or think that it's like crazy, but this book, The Screwtape Letters, really like speaks to me. And if you haven't read it, it's C.S. Lewis wrote it, and it's just kind of about spiritual warfare and a really, and like Satan and in the dark world, if we want to phrase it that way, and God's people fighting for the hearts and minds of us sitting here walking around. And I've always was wondering, I was like, why is all this shit happen, and why is all this things happening in and around me? And some targets are more valuable than others. And some people just live this mundane, boring life. And these are just some of the stories from in the book of, like, you know, they're sitting there arguing over, like, who on earth can we go after and is an influential person that, you know, you're sitting here with a microphone, you'd be an influential person. Someone who's standing on stage would be an influential person. People, you know, it's just, you know, Soccer Mom Sally and Bob the Builder, you know what I mean? Like, the agents are not going after those people to influence, you know, the universe and us.
So as you, part of it, you're recognizing the resistance that you often face. As part of that is, like, you are in a position in which you have certain successes, you have access to people, you've created a little bit of a culture, and so you end up, you feel like you're in a position of being somewhat targeted. So some of the resistance you face, you read as like, I'm up against this stuff, not necessarily because I'm like, it's not like I'm taking all these missteps, but like I have an opportunity to build something good here, and I'm getting resistance in, like, from darker places because
of it. That's something that I don't really talk about too much, but we spoke about resistance, as you brought it up earlier, and that's one of the kind of the unseen ones. It's the unseen one that just, like, is honestly one of the heaviest on my mind and my heart a lot, is this, like, you know, what does God think about all this weed stuff? You know what I mean? Like, all the Christian upbringing that I've had, like, weed is bad, it's the devil's lettuce, you know what I mean? Propaganda, you know, all that. That whole cannabis, it just flies in the face of Christianity that I was brought up with. And so there's a lot of spiritual conflict around that. And I've worked through that a lot with my buddies in my LTG, and just, like, you know, and Sean Blomquist, who's a leader of our men's group, and you know Sean for years, and he kind of said something to me one day in our meeting that was like, he had this epiphany moment. He was like, what if it's not even about the pot, Matt? It's about the people. And I was like, well, what do you mean? Because I keep telling him all these stories of all these people that I hire, I fire, and that I'm meeting, I'm helping, I'm teaching, I'm training, and then I'm interacting with, I'm going to jail, I'm getting audited, I'm getting raided, I'm getting, all these things are happening. And I was just like, why is all this shit happening? And he was like, it's not about the pot, I think it's about the people. And it's kind of like, the pot's kind of like the flame, like moths to the flame. Like, these people are kind of brought into my radar and into my circle of influence.
That in the same way that you were drawn into the industry by personal story, your dad,
your
family.
I just have this opportunity.
But that's what kind of keeps you, that it's not, so is his push like, what if it's not, you have an interest in weed culture and in weed, but you have an interest in the people who participate in weed and weed culture?
That, but there's also, you know, an opportunity to, you know, I've hired a lot of people. A lot of people have worked for me. I've taught a lot of people, you know, and so it's, you know, it seems, I don't have any kids. I'm not married, I'm 37, so I'm kind of looking at that. I'm like, my life is just taking this particular course. And I've made some decisions to be on this particular path. I just kind of step back and look at it. And I'm like, why this path? Why did this happen? And if God's really in control of all this, then this is where I was supposed to be. Now, granted, I made some choices along the way to like flow. We're going to do a decision tree, like a flow chart. Yes, go this way. No, go this way. But at the end of the day, if you ultimately subscribe to God's in control of all this shit, then why am I here and what am I doing and what is this all about? And it's, and I'm, you know, I see and meet a lot of people and I'm doing a lot of things and I'm just kind of like, what are you up to, God? Like, what's going on with all this? Let's like really trying to look at it, because like clearly all this shit is not by happenstance. That's all this is the way it is, and I'm doing what I'm doing, and I'm
nothing ever is
right. So if I really believe that and subscribe to that, and so do all the men in my group around me and my friends and family and stuff, and we all subscribe to, you know the God of the universe and the Jesus wants something to happen in and around my life, and I'm in a position of influence, then what the fuck am I supposed to be doing with it? How do I steer this the right way? Sorry, my sailor comes out of me a little bit too.
You tell me. You're more than fine.
I don't know if the children are listening to this or not. Are going to be, but probably not.
we're good.
That shit is always on my mind, dude. Like, what are you up to, God? What is all this resistance, this chaos, these lessons, and what are you preparing me for later? And I feel like this is all just a big platform for something so much bigger than just pot. And I don't know what it is, but it's something. I think the pot is just the little, we'll call it the gateway. Is that a terrible metaphor? The no, only gateway.
Actually, don't think that's a terrible metaphor. Yeah. That might be the most appropriate metaphor.
Marijuana is the gateway for me to something great, and I don't know what it's going to be.
That's really good.
It's weird, and I never expected it. It was always going to be maritime, and then I wanted to be a Navy SEAL, and then I was a rescue swimmer, and then I never became a Navy SEAL. I went to rescue swimmer school because I wasn't good enough to be a Navy SEAL, and I didn't want to go active duty, and I was like, you know, I'm going to do this instead, and then God steered me away from that shit, you know what I mean? And then it's like, I want to do real estate. I want to be a real estate investor, and my brother and I were buying houses in Norfolk, Virginia around the Navy base and stuff like that, and stuff like
that. This is the thing that's stuck.
This stuck, you know, and I've even tried to get away from this. I was like, I just want to do television and media and film. And after I did that show with this Weed Country on Discovery, I thought, you know, that's going to take off and I'm going to do this and I don't have to even grow and do weed anymore. I'll just do media and I'll do media about it. And that's still happening. But my sequel to it, Breaking Bud, did not get picked up because I beat my case. They gave me my weed back. They gave me my gun back. Kamala Harris wrote a letter to the police department and told him to give him his gun back. It was registering me mine. So I won. I beat all that. And Discovery's like, well, there's no more drama, so we don't need to do a season two. We're just going to resell your show and change the and translate it into 17 languages and sell it to 17 countries around the world, and you're not going to get any residuals. Here's your $30,000. Thank you very much.
That's how that goes.
But yeah.
You got a letter from Kamala Harris, so.
Yeah, give him his gun back, give him his weed back. So I think about all that, and I'm like, that's a lot of shit, man. Like,
yeah, it is.
A lot of shit. And that's not even nothing. Just like, any life stuff, everybody has life stuff that happens, but for some reason I attract, and some people are like, it's your fault. I'm like, no, this just happened to me. And I'm like, well, there's a mixture, there's a spectrum of shit here. There's either shit I do, there's stuff that the God of our universe wants to happen, and then there's bad stuff that just happens, and you know, and stuff happens, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, you know, and I don't know, like my uncle getting murdered 2 days ago, like that happened in Maryland, and I'm like, why though, you know, why, what's going on? Life stuff.
Yeah, a lot of it.
Yeah.
It's a lot of it. Around and kind of the undercurrent of the resistance you face, whether it's legal or social, there is some. What I wanted to read one of these articulated critiques of weed and weed culture, and just in like, I'm going to spit something out at you and have you kind of respond to it. So the writer's the writer's name is David Brooks. He's a columnist for the New York Times. Okay. He wrote a piece a couple of years ago, like right when like national legalization became more of an actual conversation. Like, hey, this is a thing that really is on the table. It wasn't just like what that would be. Absolutely bizarre, and it was like, oh my gosh, this is an absolute pipe dream. It was like, no, this is an actual conversation. This is a thing that may or may not happen. So Brooks wrote this critique that has more to do with like It's not particularly about legalization, although that's the context of the piece. I only set you up that way so you know like what he's responding to when he writes it. So I'm going to read, like I'll read a section and like you can respond as if Brooks is in the room.
All right.
He talks about he had why he stopped smoking weed as a young man. And he says that he and his friends, I think we gave it up first because we each had a few embarrassing incidents. Stone people do stupid things. That's it. So the initial part of his critique is like, well, because bad things happen when you smoke weed. Master Atwell response.
I could honestly say, yeah, stupid things have happened when marijuana has been smoked. I would be fooling myself, but you know that's the double-edged sword you get with any type of intoxicant that God has given us to play with. You know,
yeah,
you know, from alcohol to you know whatever, you know. So yeah, I mean, but
it falls in the same categories. You can make that same critique about alcohol.
Well, alcohol, you know, there's a big alcohol is dangerous. It kills people. Cannabis has never, you know, outright killed anybody from overdose because you cannot overdose and die from it. But you know, it can and does impair judgment. It's known to do. You eat a brownie and go try to drive a car, you're definitely wrecking the car and dying.
Yeah,
like that happens and will happen. Now it's not on the records, it's not on the books. People in the cannabis industry would probably shun me, be like, you shouldn't have said that. I'd be like, let's be real. I've always been that way. Like probably shouldn't eat that brownie or take a dab to the face and then jump on your Suzuki Gixxer and go do dumb stuff and your judgment's impaired and then stuff happens. But as long as there's no alcohol in their breath, that's something that might not be, you know, ever reported or recorded.
Right.
And I'm not trying to, like, you know, shit on my industry or, like, open up the dirty laundry of it, but if we're just going to be honest about, like, have stupid things ever happen when people are high on weed? Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
You know, but no one's ever overdosed from it and like, itself and died like alcohol can. And, you know, alcohol has put tens of thousands of people die a year from alcohol-related deaths. And then the abuse that happens. I had never seen a high on a brownie dude beating his wife, I'll tell you that.
Good. Second phase of the critique, he says, the most of us developed higher pleasures, which I think is kind of a funny phrase there to use in.
He's saying he found better drugs.
Well, in a sense, he said we developed higher pleasure. Smoking was fun, but for a bit, but it was kind of repetitive. The deeper sources of happiness usually involve a state of going somewhere, becoming better at something, learning about something, overcoming difficulty, and experiencing a sense of satisfaction and accomplishment. So the critique is like, that's fine, but there are better things to do with your time.
Oh, how nice of him as a Monday morning quarterback 20 years later to be so eloquent about and like delusions of grandeur of how smart I was in my youthful age of like, we decided we could do better things. That's bullshit. And you probably just were, whatever, weed's not that cool. But to embellish on it and say like, oh, we were just, you know, super progressive people and didn't want to cloud our mind. Bullshit. Some people smoke weed, they like it, and they keep doing it the rest of their life. And then some people just don't, you know what I mean? But like...
You don't buy the argument that like it's a lesser pleasure that like
no you because sometimes smoking weed can enhance something that is so mundane and monotonous, and some people actually, and I actually specifically remember, you know, and this might be sophomoric but we did these things. Me and my little brother Mike would be like, let's go to the movies, but wait, let's get high first. And that was like a thing, like, hey, let's go pick up this furniture at this customer's house for my dad. Boy, let's smoke a bowl first. You know what I mean? Like, so the glass half full, the glass half empty. Some people see this as, this is my daily medicine. This is what I do. Some people have a glass of wine every day and they kid themselves. Some people gorge themselves on Twinkies and that's their fix every day. Some people are just assholes and belittle other people and that's what makes and fills their cup for the day. Some people want to smoke a damn bowl for the day and take the edge off and just check out for 9% of their intellectual capacity because weed just does something in their brain that makes them feel good, like cheeseburgers do for that guy, and belittling and bemeaning other people. Everybody's got their little fix and wearing their little mask, and there's a cannabis culture. People are like, yeah, let's just smoke some weed and make this day better because, yeah, maybe my life does suck. Maybe I have a shitty life and I want to smoke a joint. Or maybe I actually go to creative places when I do it. Some people want to maybe numb their mind and actually check out. And is that a wrong thing? Some people are like, oh, you're just dulling your mind. Well, maybe I want to dull my mind. maybe there's a lot of shit going on in my mind that I don't really want to fucking think about right now. And I'm an adult and I can do that. And I can go to a bar and drink myself into oblivion. And you get the right to go do that. So don't throw stones. That's how, I mean, that's kind of like my,
yeah,
kind of way I think. That's your take. Like, yeah. Yeah.
Like 10, 15 years from now, the industry goes the way of everything else. It's going to consolidate,
I think. But the way of everything else, I really believe. And it's sad because I would, you know, I come from a small business background. I'm a small business guy. I went from being self-employed to small business owner. Now I'm going to be the CEO of a tiny, tiny, tiny corporation. And I have to grow and be that way. But the little guy can't, it's going to be really hard to survive. And I think there's going to be a lot of consolidation and a lot of buyouts. So like a lot of people grow corn. A lot of people grow wheat. A lot of people make milk. But there's not a lot of brands. So it gets purchased at wholesale, white labeled, and put into Clover or put into whatever, you know, private labeled white box brands. And so then that's what's going to happen because all these little small farms everywhere, the very few that do get a license aren't going to have the capability to do branding and bring a product to market and prepackage it. So you can get a cultivation license and grow it now. But then you have to have a transportation license to take it off of your property or pay someone else to do it. Then they take it to a processing place to have it trimmed, and you need to get that license too or pay someone else to do it. And then it goes to a distribution company. Then the distribution company taxes it 20% and takes it to the lab to get tested. The lab brings it back to the distribution company. Then distribution company takes it to the dispensary. The dispensary puts 15% excise tax on it right there. And then they sell it to the retail customer and they put 10% on it right there. And so it's going the way of diamonds and jewelry and alcohol and everything else. A bottle of like $20 Jack really costs like $2. Mm-hmm. By the time it reaches the consumer at like $20, it's all tax and tax and middleman fees along the way, and that's just how every product is. So yeah, it is definitely going that way.
Will you be here in 15 years? Do you want to be here in 15 years?
No, I don't think so. I've been here in California. I moved here in 2002 as a sophomore in college.
I mean in the industry.
In the industry? I would like to think I would have moved on to bigger and better things and will probably be psychologically and financially satisfied with this challenge and move on to something else. And I think that God probably has a bigger plan for me, to be honest. I think that this is, while challenging and a lot of resistance, I'm now on the precipice of winning big in a big way by having my permit and then building something so big that it has a life of its own that it can carry on with or without me. And that was the, because if somebody walks in here and shoots me right now in the chest and I die, my brand, my company, everything's done. But if I can build something that can survive me, then I can freeze me up to go do other things that I really feel like I can do, want to do, and I don't know what they are yet. Mm-hmm. I mean, I got some dreams and I'd like to go do film and television more. That really is where my passion is creating film and television. I enjoy that. I get life out of that. It doesn't matter how much I get paid to do it, but I obviously have to pay bills and I have money, and I built this 747. I had a little, I use a metaphor of like airplanes. I built a little Cessna 152, my little weed farm, and growing weed in Vallejo, downtown Vallejo, little Cessna plane. I can get that up off the ground with me and my homies in it and a couple employees. The next level is get a little G6, you know what I mean? And then I can get that off the ground. And I don't have enough resources to operate that plane all the time. But now I built a 747 and it's barreling down the freeway as recreational, and all the planes are on the runway. And I have built a big one and I don't have the cash flow to get it off the ground.
What's it look like for this to be about people for you?
The first word that comes to mind is like, is a freedom. Is because if you could be financially free, then you could really just do what you wanted to do and like actually be who you wanted to be instead of being entrapped and like enslaved to a job. And so the cannabis industry, to me, I saw it as not just like the medicinal side, but a monetary motivator for freedom, not being a slave to me driving a ship, right? To a lot of people, it's their medicine and their pathway to that. But being about the people, like, everybody's a slave to their job.
Yep.
Everybody's broke. Everybody wants to work for themselves and be their own boss. And I see and saw cannabis as the pathway for that to actually be real. And I made it happen. And I come from a small business entrepreneurial background. So I was like, this is viable. This is doable for me. This is awesome.
And have you, and how have you seen that happen? Like, do you, like, what are some, maybe if you have some particulars, like what, like talk about like some
individual people.
Yeah.
Okay. So I was in my office doing some morning quiet time. And then in this older gentleman came down my driver named Levy, and his two sons were with him, and they asked me for a job. And here I am after going to jail, and I'm just growing weed in my house and stuff and paying my bills and stuff. And these two teenagers that had come and gotten weed from me before, because I kind of knew them in the neighborhood. And then they came to me and they're like, yo, what's up? Can we get a job? And I was like, because I paid their dad to build make a deck patio for me in the front yard many years before. And I was like, well, shouldn't you guys be in school right now? Like, what are you standing in my driveway for? And they're like, well, we miss school. We're couch surfing right now. We're hopping from place to place. And I was like, all right. And I had an empty bedroom here because I just had, you know, another friend move out. And I was in by myself. And I was like, you're not in school because you need money to buy books, but you're not even in school. And I was like, I can't really tell what's going on here, but I could just tell. And I was literally sitting in my office looking out my window, and then walked out my driveway reading my Proverbs for the day. And I was just like, something just spoke to me down there. And I was like, something's, they're here for a reason. Something's happening here. And I was like, I got an empty room in my house. I'm going to take these two teenage boys in, right? Their dad is a good dude, honest guy, raised a lot of kids. I think he has 13 kids. And hard ass worker, and he is a beautiful craftsman and tradesman, and they just fell in some hard times, and they were friends of mine in the community, and they came by, and I was like, you know, I have the means to share a little bit of what I have with these two boys. And they lived here in my house in that room right there for 3 years, and I taught them how to do the entire weed industry from the bottom up, and got them, one of them to graduate high school. The other one just decided he didn't want to do it anymore. I took them to school every day and brought them home until they both got their licenses ending. And then they both got, I paid them both and they both got cars. And then I taught them about finances. I taught them their multiplication tables, about their paycheck and their payroll. And if you don't know how to do your paycheck in your mind, then your boss is going to do it for you. Just the life lessons of coming to America. Yeah. They were from the Virgin Islands. And this is the game you're playing now, and passing some of that wisdom on so that they could be essentially be free and not be couch surfing on people's couches and falling through the cracks of a crack system and all that shit. And I was like, you know, I have some shit to share. I had a lot of people share a lot of good stuff with me, and I felt really fortunate to have and be able to have it. I'm sitting here with all this gold mine of knowledge and opportunity and no one to share it with.
Yeah.
So I was like, I'm going to start hiring people again. And I came back out and started doing it again after I went to jail and lost everything.
Yeah.
I'm going to start hiring some people again. Now those guys are have their own weed farm. You want them graduated from high school. They all have their own cars. And so they now have been, you know, give a fish, give a pole, teach a man to fish, that whole metaphor.
Yeah.
Those two young guys are now off and doing their own thing. And I've had over 100 employees over the last 10 years, over 100. And
including Squeeze.
Squeeze is here right
Squeeze,
now.
Squeeze is one of those stories for you.
Squeeze is. Squeeze was on the street in downtown Vallejo. Mauricio Rodriguez, for all you local Vallejos that know him, but he goes by Squeeze. Yeah, he was homeless, no job, on the street, and I opened up my dispensary on 717 Marin Street, in the every space vacant and empty, and I started selling weed out of my dispensary. And he was selling weed on the street, too, and so we became friends and chatted. I needed a security guard, and he needed a job, and so it's kind of like, you can, let's join forces. You know, you know everybody on the street, so protect me. I will pay you.
Yeah.
Don't sell weed to them. Sell it through here. Funnel teacher. We had a little joining of forces down there, and then I hired another one and another one, and I hired some friends, and all of these people, you know, that gravitated towards the little business that I created, and this little cash cow was making money and paying people, and it transformed the internal finances of people's homes and lives for several years until tragedy happens. You lose a grow, you lose a business, you go to jail, Matt goes to jail, the business gets shut down and moved, and it would upset and destroy people's lives too. And that really pissed me off as a business person and entrepreneur. I'm like, I built something, I made something, I gave all these people jobs, they love it, what the fuck are you doing tipping this over for? And it's legal and you're interpreting this in a different way. Yeah. And it infuriated me, and it made me act out and lash out at the city in some narratives that I kind of regret doing and saying. But I was pissed, and I was immature, and I was a new businessman and trying to do a good thing, and we were all trying to figure out a weird illegal business. But, you know, literally cannabis and the finances of it were and are and will always be changing people's lives, and it pissed people off. there's power grabs of other people, like, oh wait, all these poor people of color all have money now, they're all growing weed, and you know, and I sell t-shirts and jewelry and I'm mad about it. I sell barbecue chicken and I'm mad about it. And all these neighboring businesses see my business thriving and they see me as a drug dealer and they're pissed about it. But yet, look at all the people that are getting paid. They didn't even have a job, and now we had 30 dispensaries here in the city at one time. 30. And all of them having 5 to 10 employees each. All making money. Everybody was making money. Nobody was not eating. And then they're arbitrary, like, we're only going to let 4 happen. Like, fuck you. Who are you to say only 4 can happen? What about the free market? Why don't you let everybody, all rent buildings, and let all the landlords get paid, and let all the businesses be filled up, and let the free market decide what saturation is, and let economy happen? And that's probably my Republican roots and background, but still, let it happen. It's the free, this is America. Who are you to restrict and say how many employees I can have, how many locations I can have, how many of these locations can exist, and you're restricting wealth from an economically deprived city that was fucking bankrupt. Like, bankrupt. They had closed 3 schools, fire departments, police departments, and they're over here equivocating over where the money comes from. That's like your pastor being like, oh, wait, no, we don't want your money. We know where it came from. No. The powers that be in the city were like, these drug people, meh. I'm like, just tax it. From the get-go, just tax the shit out of it, shut up, and fix things. And they were like, I don't know, you know, this is scary.
Well, they did more than I don't know.
Yeah, oh yeah, they did more than I don't know. Yeah, they called law enforcement and put us all in jail. Yes, yes. Multiple times and destroyed my life. And many hundreds of other people's lives.
Which is different than saying
that. Yeah, you're right. I was, I don't know why I downplayed that.
Yeah. Maddie, thank you.
Yeah. Thanks, man.
Thank you very much.
And thank you for listening to this episode of the At Sea Podcast. If you like what we're up to, share this episode with a friend or 10, and leave a rating and a review at iTunes. Until next time.